The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
My first guest this morning is a Tipperary native and the youngest head curator in Ireland's museum history. Cliona Purcell is from Carrick-on-Shore, and at 29, she's the youngest head curator of any designated museum in the country. In fact, she's the head curator, very hard to say head curator, the second largest museum in Ireland. She joins me this morning to tell us about her career so far. Did we even mention what that museum was, Cliona?
Not quite, but it's okay. We've got loads of museums to mention, so we'll
go for it. You list those out
so
for me.
It's Waterford Treasures, so okay. A lot of local people will know it because we are six museums in the Viking Triangle, so we've got quite a few.
Wow. Well, I have to say, you know, typically museums and 20-somethings don't really equate, and I know that's quite the stereotype, but
it is.
You know... I suppose we expect something from 20-somethings.
I know. I can see the disappointment that there's no tweed blazer here with like the elbow patches or anything. No, it's I'm not exactly what people are expecting, yeah. I think. But, you know, museums are a little bit different to what people think sometimes. Uh-huh.
And they've changed so much in the last few years.
So much, absolutely. Mm. I think what a museum can be is becoming a little bit more evident to people. I know, especially during lockdown, people sort of, they all started founding their own museums and Animal Crossing. So,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly. I remember, it's probably the only school tour I remember from primary school, going to the museums in Dublin and being really, you know, not massively blown away by them. But now when I go, I'm just, you know.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Do you think they've changed a lot?
I think a lot of people, when they think of a museum, they're picturing something quite stuffy, quite boring almost. And they're just picturing loads of dusty objects that nobody like understands behind glass cases. But nowadays, a museum is a much more vibrant space. You know, there's a lot of events in museums around the country now. I mean, we just had Heritage Week just this week gone by. We have... what's it called? Oh, Culture Night coming up.
Oh,
so
yes,
there's loads of really exciting events that happen in museums now. And it's much more about, you know, what people want to see rather than what we think you should see.
Mm-hmm. And is that part of your remit?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, no, it's about sort of moving beyond the old sort of stuffy history and moving into something a bit more exciting.
So how did this all start for you? Did you always have a love for history?
I did. My parents are sick of me saying it at this point. But although it's my mum who reminded me, apparently when I was 7 years old, I told her I'd be a museum curator.
Really?
Now, I don't know that many seven-year-olds kind of pick a job quite like that. I think it's usually, you know, football player model or something. But I was going for the slightly more niche one, I suppose.
And had you visited a museum at that stage at seven? Do you remember what your first one was?
Okay. We had the OPW card every summer and we'd go around to all the different sites and my mum would bring us up to Dublin and everything. So no, they were really, really brilliant about sort of getting my brother and me a sort of a full view of the history of the entire country.
Can you remember a museum in particular from back then that you loved?
Oh gosh, you know, I think the earliest one I definitely remember being in was the Rocket Castle, and that's actually because my brother got lost that day, so it's all very exciting. But I loved it, and just sort of even the sort of the smell of an old building is something that I really remember from my childhood. And in the medieval museum, we're really lucky, we have medieval undercrofts underneath it, and that same sort of wonderful smell is down there, so it's really evocative, I think.
So you studied history and English in UL, is that right?
I did. Now, I came to it in a slightly roundabout way.
Okay.
When I was in secondary school, loved history, just adored it. But everybody says, you know, there's no jobs in history.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to do the responsible thing and go to college to do science because
there
were jobs in sciences and not any in history. And I was miserable. I went to UL to do physics and I hated it. Not because the lectures were awful, they were brilliant. It wasn't what I was supposed to be doing, you know.
Okay.
And I switched. I switched into history and English at the absolute last minute.
Okay. So you got to go straight, you just did a few weeks in it, did you?
I did.
Oh,
I did a month of physics and then switched right into history, which was a real change. But I just didn't look back after that. So I went on then and did a master's in history afterwards and came into the museum.
And what kind of jobs were suggested when you were doing the master's in particular? What was the kind of the prospect for someone doing a master's in history?
A lot of the time, now my master's class was quite small. Usually if you've gone that far, if you've gone beyond the undergrad, you're kind of looking at either staying in academia or going into consultancy work or museums. Now, museums are very competitive in Ireland. There's not a lot of designated museums here. There are some wonderful undesignated museums, but it is a very, very competitive industry, heritage in Ireland.
And yet you got to stay very close to home.
I did. I'm very lucky. I'm really very, very grateful to the staff at Waterford Treasures.
And when you graduated with your master's, did you go straight into museums or did you do a bit of travelling?
No, I went straight in.
Wow. And straight into Waterford.
I did. Yeah. Well, I had actually been there before.
Mm-hmm.
So under my undergrad, you had to do a period of 6 months of work experience. And I came to Waterford Treasures at for that, essentially. And I was in and out over the next few years. And then when I did my master's, I came back full time. So I went in as a research assistant, went to an exhibitions assistant, education officer, and now curator and head curator.
Wow. And what does that mean, curator and head curator?
It's a funny word. I suppose at its most basic, curators are the people who decide what's going to go into the glass cases.
Wow.
Now, there's
no mean feat.
There is a lot more to it than that. Okay. Obviously, when you're dealing with historic objects, a lot of them are very fragile. They're very sensitive. So you're sort of responsible for their care as well. So we're always monitoring the environments, that kind of thing, to make sure everything's in exactly the habitat it needs. We're also writing all of the text on the walls. Oh. We're writing the tour scripts. So it's a really, really varied job, which is part of the reason that I love it so much.
So you've kind of brought some new developments yourself into it. You've got kind of a horrible history slant as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we opened our latest museum last year, actually, the Irish Wake Museum. Mm-hmm. A few people might have seen it, a few people might have attended. But when we opened, it was over 14s, because obviously death is one of those subjects mm-hmm. that's difficult to do, you know. And I suppose when I came in, that was something I wanted to look at changing, because when I was a kid, I was flat out obsessed with death. I was a real goth kid, you know, okay. Absolute goth baby.
What age are we talking here?
Oh, God. I think I had my first Horrible Histories book when I was about 4. Okay. And I loved it. So I sort of thought, you know, we'll try it. We'll see if we can sort of change it up a bit. And it seems to be working. It's, I think, death is one of those things that people are a bit afraid of involving kids in sometimes. Mm. But, you know, kids are aware of it. They experience it. And
how does it work at the Wake Museum for younger children then?
It's an interesting experience, the Wake Museum, because it's a look at 5,000 years of mm-hmm. funerary practices in Ireland. Obviously, everyone always says that the Irish do death properly. They mm-hmm. do it differently. We're really, really well known for how we do our funerals. And you sort of go through all of those developments. And a lot of people don't realise that some of the things that they do at a wake in a funeral home, they have, you know, thousands of years worth of history behind them. So it's more about kind of exploring that. But we have some fun little bits in there. You'll sort of, you'll see our plague victim, for instance. You'll go and see some information about medieval cures and medicine in the 18th century, which is not maybe something most of us would want to look at today. I'm certainly quite glad that we've moved on from some of the cures that you'll explore there. But yeah, there's a few different bits to it. And then you'll participate in a wake on the top floor. Okay. So we've got Auntie Nora laid out.
Have you made something specifically for younger children, or are they seeing the same tour that everyone sees when they go to the
Wake
Museum?
We've changed the tour altogether. Okay. So it's a new tour that's more child friendly, and we're putting in some sensory elements at the moment. So you'll be able to hear and smell things, and we'll sort of invite you to play scent roulette, and you can, you know, try on costumes and all that kind of thing. So a lot of that's coming now in the off season.
Okay, good stuff. I must check it out. Mm. As you said, you're the head curator of 6 museums which are under the Waterford Treasures banner.
Yeah.
Have you got a favourite child?
Oh, gosh, have I got a favourite child? You know, I have 2 favourite children.
Okay, tell me.
My master's was in 18th century history, so mm-hmm. I love the Bishop's Palace.
Okay,
and
beautiful.
Recently have gotten to change the tour on that one as well. So now Lovely. We have a tour inspired by Scandal in Excess. So it's a little bit in the line of Bridgerton.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is very popular these days.
Scandal in Excess.
Scandal in Excess. A lot of scandal in Waterford's history.
Really?
So that's what the tour is all based around. Some sort of the lesser known stories that people okay. might not be aware of. But if I was to be taking a tour of a building, it's the medieval. I love the medieval museum.
And is that just for the crypts underneath, or just in general?
It's just the whole feel of the medieval. Yeah. I think it's really bridging that gap between what you want from a traditional museum, mm-hmm. but a much newer, sort of brighter
it
place
is.
As well.
Yeah, what always stands out to me are the vestments that are there.
Oh, absolutely.
They're stunning.
They're just second to none. You know, yeah. I was on holidays last week and I was going to a few different museums, and nobody's got vestments like we've got vestments. You know, you just don't see them.
Explain to people what are vestments, because I can't explain it. I just
know
they're called vestments.
One. So the vestments are sort of the traditional clothing worn by priests during high mass. So okay. they're high mass vestments. So basically the Catholic Church obviously is very well known for, again, its excess.
Mm-hmm.
These particular vestments are very exciting because we have a collection of copes, chasubles and a dalmatic, which are all made of cloth of gold, which essentially means that the thread that they are embroidered with is solid gold thread. So wow. they are enormously expensive, enormously heavy, and absolutely beautiful.
Wow. Have you ever got to put those on yourself?
If I had, I wouldn't be saying it, would I?
No.
Gosh, they're very, very fragile. But we do actually have a hat on the top floor. It's Henry VIII's cap of maintenance.
Wow.
And we had a counsellor in, former counsellor, a couple of years ago. And he had a look at it in the case and went, God, it's funny to see it behind glass. I remember having that on.
What?
So it's, now this was before it was in the care of the museum. Mm-hmm. This was years and years and years ago. But so, you know, it's I'm not going to tell you that none of them have ever been tried on, but certainly not by me.
Is there any museum around the world that you've visited that just blew you away?
Oh gosh, I'm a real museum head.
Okay,
I know. I went to Lisbon for 3 days a few years ago. I did 14 museums in the 3 days.
Wow.
So I love museums.
I have been to Lisbon many times. I can't even think of a museum that's there. The aquarium, could we call that?
The ocean area.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's a great one. Oh gosh, my favourite one. Do you know what? I have a real soft spot for the Museum of Archaeology on Kildare Street.
Okay.
I think it's, as you said, it's changed a lot over the years, and there's some really, really just, there's such an overview of Ireland's history in there, and there's some fantastic objects that mm-hmm. you'd have read about in primary school that you've completely forgotten that exist. Mm. But when you go and see them in person, they just blow you away.
Are people mixed up by what is a museum? Because even when you're saying that, I'm thinking of the Tenement Museum that's on Henry... Mm. Would you call that a museum on Henrietta Street?
So
that's where my confusion comes from, that I presume that museums are, like you said earlier, what we expect them to be when we were kids. Everything mm-hmm. behind glass and... You know, and it's not always like that anymore.
No, not at all. And of course, Epic Museum in Dublin, the Emigration Museum, famously has no objects, mm-hmm. you know, and that's something that you can be now. I think a lot of the confusion, and you would have used the word earlier, a designated museum. So there's two different types. There's a designated museum, which is essentially... we're going to get really complicated here now. So there's the National Museum, and then there's the 12 designated local authority museums.
Okay.
So we're basically authorised to hold objects from the national collection.
Okay.
So usually when a person goes into a museum, we like to ask the kids from the primary school sometimes, you know, who do you think owns these objects? And usually they'll say, well, the museum. And that's not true, because the objects actually belong to every single person on this island.
Okay.
You have a stake in our vestments. You have a stake in the Ardagh Chalice.
Should be able to wear them.
So it's we are authorised to hold those objects. But a museum can be so much more than that. There's obviously, as you say, the Tenement Museum, there's Epic, there's all of these wonderful museums, down to the likes of the Leprechaun Museum. You know, there's something for everybody in what a museum is. Technically, a museum is just a place where you go to learn about history, and it's mm-hmm. presented for you, essentially. There may be objects, there may just be information, there may be sort of technological interactive exhibits, but there's lots of different things that a museum
yes,
can be.
There really is. And what I love about museums is it's all about people and how people lived mm-hmm. and how people died and all the in-between.
Oh,
that's
100%.
The sort of thing that I really love. Well, congratulations on
your role
as head curator at just 29 at Waterford Treasures, which encompasses 6 museums. I'm going to try and name them now.
Pop quiz.
Bishop's Palace.
Yeah.
Museum of Time.
Yeah.
The Irish Wake Museum.
There we go.
Oh, the Medieval Museum.
There we are.
And 2 that I can't think of.
The Irish Silver Museum.
Oh.
And then the exhibition in Reginald's Tower is done by ourselves.
Ah,
the OPW run the museum, but we do the exhibition.
Okay, so you get to do all the stuff in there as well and write all the blurbs.
I'm telling you, I'm treated every day.
You really are. Well, Cliona, thanks a million for coming in. I know you're so super busy. If you want to check out what Waterford Treasures has to offer, you can go onto their website. It's waterfordtreasures.com, and of course, based all over Waterford City. If you're have your kids back to school or you have free time yourself, go and just soak it all up for a morning or an afternoon. Cliona, thanks a million.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
My next guest is a secondary school teacher turned cooking influencer. She's recently uploaded a PDF to her Instagram account with some simple tips and recipes for college students, from what utensils needed to ingredients and how to. I've already been using her recipes. We're going to talk to Irish Mammy Cooks, a.k.a. Orla Drumgool. It's very good to talk to you, Orla.
Hi, Orla. Another Orla. It's nice to talk to you too.
Very unusual to have 2 Orlas, I find.
I know. And actually, I'm older than you, I imagine. In my day, there were no Orlas, but it seems to be becoming popular now for the teenage set. So I teach lots of Orlas.
Oh, do you?
Nice.
It's
yeah,
like the Kylies. There was lots of Kylies at one stage. So maybe we're like Kylie.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. I don't know. But I'm only the same as you. I'm just the ordinary ORLA.
Yes, me too. When I was a teenager, I decided to go for the GH, but I soon learned my ways and realised the ORLA was how I was christened. So let's continue with that.
Exactly.
It's lovely to talk to you. I've been following Irish Mammy Cooks for a good while now, because I think we can really overcomplicate cooking. And if you saw my saved section on Instagram, I think your brain would be a bit addled, because it's just full of recipes that I will never use.
I know. I agree with you. And I do the same thing, Orla. And like, I have about 50 cookbooks inside in the house, and I have another 50 cookbooks that I have to bin or send to recycling or send to a shop, because I buy books all the time. And then I never make any of the recipes, because it calls for 25 ingredients and there are 17 steps to it. And life does not have to be that complicated.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, so I suppose I kind of like the idea. People think I'm a great cook, but I said, yeah, but I only cook easy things. So it's easy to seem like a great cook when it's a very easy thing to make.
Well, you know? As I've said already, I've already cooked two of your recipes on the PDF that you have for college students. So it is something that you've published that anyone can use. And like even, we'll talk about it later actually, but even simple things like using a scissors on chicken, I never even thought of that, you know? I'm there busy chopping up all the chicken, my hands feel awful. But anyway, let's go back to the very beginning. And why and when did you start your Instagram page, Irish Mammy Cooks?
So I think I started it sometime in February 2021. I kind of got onto the wheel of Instagram late, I suppose. Lockdown had happened. We were back at work. We were back in school. My dad had been in a nursing home. He had dementia and he came home. And so we had carers living in with mum and dad. And at the weekends, we kind of compensated for the carers. We took over their job. And so every time I went home, I used to cook for mum and dad. So I would fill the freezer for them. And I kind of thought people liked my recipes. And I thought I used to do PR for the school. And I love creative writing. I'm an English teacher and I'm creative in lots of ways. And I thought I need something to do that is going to fulfill this creativity in me. And I started blogging about cooking because so many people wanted to know how to make things that I cooked for them. And that's kind of where it began. And it was really for myself I was doing it. And to be honest, I kind of didn't care if I had an audience or not. It was just fulfilling something creative in me.
What was that first recipe that you put up there?
I did a burger recipe.
Oh, okay.
And it was, I used to follow a lady called Kitchen Sanctuary and I loved, she made these potatoes, easy chips, homemade chips. And you know, homemade chips are impossible to make. And I loved the recipe and I thought, okay, I'm going to do a variation on that. And also I had a homemade burger recipe that's like the easiest thing in the world. You don't have breadcrumbs in it, so it's gluten-free. There's no dairy, there are no intolerances in it. And I thought, God, everybody who eats meat can make these. So that was the first thing I put up there and just kind of took it from there. And just every time, like for me, if I'm having a difficult day at work or if I'm stressed, my sort of therapy is to bake or to cook.
Okay.
So really, it was for myself I started it, you know.
And when did it start to take off? Like you've over 70,000 followers now. Was there a moment that, did someone mention you or how did you start to really ramp up the followers?
I never showed myself on the videos. I always just showed it being made. Never had myself, never talked on it, any of that. And I have a lovely nephew-in-law, Tig, who said, you know, he said, Orla, there's just one thing missing from your blog. It's you. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, like, it's very impersonal. Like, you don't talk on it. Everything is written and there's music. But he said, like, you need to talk. So I kind of started talking and it grew then to about 8,000 or 9,000. And then I kind of thought, okay, I'm just going to go on camera. And I went on camera. And so last November, I had about 8,000 followers. And it's just grown steadily since then. So I haven't done ads or anything.
Okay.
It has been word of mouth. I suppose I like the name of it, Irish Mammy Cooks, because I think, you know, there are so many of us. And it's quite popular, I suppose, abroad as well, because people go, oh, my God, it's mammy cooking. And it reminds me of my childhood. And, you know, all of these expats in Australia and America and Canada contact me. And they love it too because they say, oh, you just reminded me of when I used to come to Ireland to visit my nan and she made scones and, you know, so that's kind of nice.
So it's a bit of nostalgia as well.
Yeah.
Now, you have created this PDF for college students, but I would just like to say it's not just for college students. As I was saying earlier, I've already made your chicken satay and I made your soup in like minutes it took me to put together yesterday.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to do this?
Because, well, I have three college going daughters myself. So in 2020, our eldest girl, Fanula, was a COVID lockdown kid and she did her leaving cert and she went to study music in Manchester in RNCM. And so she was leaving home. She was very much a country child, had never gone on a bus before, I kid you not. And she was heading off to Manchester to live by herself and to feed herself. There were no takeaways open. There was no access to college canteen. There was nothing. So she was going and she had nothing. So I had to kind of say, okay, what do we have to get her? So we kind of came up with a list of the must-haves in the kitchen. And then I said, oh my God, she's not going to be able to feed herself. So I made her buy her shopping. sent her to the shop with me, and she had a budget and she bought all her shopping. And I remember we were laughing about it recently, and she said, "Mom, I remember I said, can I have some dilute?" And I said, "Did you buy it?" And she said, "No, I didn't." And I said, "Okay, you can have it today, but you can't have it again."
Oh.
But it was literally to give, and she had a week, and she said it was the best thing she ever did, because it gave her confidence that actually she could feed herself and she wouldn't starve. And so then 2 years later, Blonde, my next girl, went to Maynooth, and she is like me. She absolutely loves cooking, and she would tweak my recipes. So the satay is originally mine, and she has kind of tweaked it to make it better. And so she loves cooking. But again, we did the same thing with her. What are your essentials for the kitchen? And then Aideen, my youngest daughter, has gone to Manchester as well. And so we were old hands at it at that stage. So every year on the blog, I've kind of done a little post of, I'd go into Lidl and Aldi, I'd go into Home Store and More, I'd go into Dunn's, I'd find the things that are really good. I was in Kildare Village yesterday afternoon after work, and I saw a little blender. So I shared that on my blog on a story, because there are little things, and sometimes parents buy things and they'll spend 20 quid on a set of three pots. And I think, spend 20 euros on one pot that will last them for a lifetime.
Yeah,
so I have never replaced anything that I bought the girls, because I just bought them good things to start, less but good stuff that is hard wearing, and it doesn't have to be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's hard wearing and when it's good and when it's solid, it'll last them.
Now, and on that list, you have, you know, things like scissors. And so you've really like thought it through what people need.
And I didn't add anything. As I said, I was thinking about this. I didn't add anything for baking. So there's one silicone spatula that they sell in Home Store and More. And I mean, people laugh at me because I gift it to people.
Okay.
I sent one over to Manchester this summer because it is the best spatula you'll ever buy. It's $5.99. And if you bake, you need that spatula.
Okay.
But I didn't add the baking because I thought, I don't want parents to think I'm sending their students to college going, oh, and I'm going to bake, because the reality is lots of them won't. Mine do, but lots of them don't. But they need to be able to actually eat healthily and not spend a fortune.
Exactly.
Because the veg costs a euro.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever meat, if you're a boy and you need two chicken breasts, well, then it's dearer. But if you're a girl, you take one chicken breast or whatever. If you don't eat meat at all, you can put in cauliflower, or you can put in your chickpeas. But it's not expensive to feed yourself.
And it's great, even for parents who might be sending kids to college like you yourself did. You have a whole list there of cooking utensils, so they can take that list from the PDF and go and buy the parchment paper, buy the oven tray, the wooden spoon and all that. And then what you've come up with is these one pot recipes that can become either a curry or a satay. And you've even listed things like the fact that bagels will have a longer shelf life.
You buy a pan of bread and it goes off. You buy bagels and they have a shelf life of a week, and you can use them for your breakfast. You can have toast a bagel with some of that peanut butter. So even things like, you know, somebody said, oh, well, you know, different people on the blog will have said, I don't make satay like this. I add coconut milk and a half a tin of that, and I add that. And I'm going, yeah, but then what do you do with the other half?
Exactly.
So the peanut butter you can have on a toast a bagel in the morning for your breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
The bagels also, you can make garlic bread. We make garlic bread with the bagels, so you don't have to buy other bread for it.
Mm-hmm.
You can have your lunch with your bagels. The honey and the peanut butter can be put into yogurt, and you can put it over your granola in the morning. So I suppose we kind of tweak it to say, okay, if you have these, you won't ever be hungry, because there are all sorts of different ways you can use those things as well.
Yeah, brilliant.
Even the stock cubes, Orla. Like, you can buy beef stock cubes, you can buy chicken stock cubes, just buy vegetable. Because vegetable stock cubes basically serve the same purpose as all the other stock cubes. They add flavour.
Okay.
And they add seasoning. So you don't have to have three different ones that'll go off in your cupboard, and they'll come back in June and you say, you never used any of my OXO. And you're going, no, because I didn't need it, because I used the vegetable ones, Mommy.
Well, listen, it's a long time since I've been a student, and yet I've been making great use out of this PDF. You've so much on it. Bolognese, burgers, even have a dough recipe if someone wants to make naan, or if they want to make flatbreads in there as well.
Yeah.
Really sending people off to college if they're going to be living away in the right stead of what they can do, and if they want to eat well, but also save some money. You're at Irish Mammy Cooks on Instagram,
yes.
Orla. I have to laugh at some of the comments. And they are things that I think that if someone doesn't like, you know, coconut milk? What could be the, you know, what could you use instead? And I see bloggers so politely replying to absolutely everyone. And then there's the people, like you said, who say, oh, you're doing that wrong. I add soy sauce or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd say you have to have a certain temperament to deal with all this, do you?
Well, do you know, Orla, I also teach, I teach SPHE, so I'm a music and English teacher, but I teach SPHE and we teach media studies and digital skills to our children, and I'm a year ahead. And I always say to my children, social media can be a place of good as well as a place of negativity. Mm-hmm. So I try to practice what I preach, and I do think, you know something, I have no idea why that person made a nasty comment. Like, I've blocked about five people in 3 years on Instagram simply because I've kind of thought, you know, you've made five comments on my blog and all of them have been really nasty and really negative, and I haven't answered them and I haven't engaged in a fight. I've just moved on because, you know, there's a program called Bully for You that we're bringing into our school this year. Children need to understand you don't have to engage in the negativity. You just block them and move on. Yeah. And so, you know something, if somebody wants to tell me, actually, this is a better way, it's easy to make them feel good by saying, God, that's a great idea. Thanks for sharing that. I love the idea that everybody has a different version of this recipe. Yeah. And that doesn't hurt anybody.
Yes.
To be kind.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, good advice. Irish Mammy Cooks is the Instagram account. That's where you'll find the link to the college cooking, college utensils. I'm not in college. I've been using it all week. And that is Orla Drumgoole, the woman behind Irish Mammy Cooks. Orla, thanks a million for joining me this morning.
Thanks a million for inviting me, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning, it's Beat 102-103. Okay, let's do some movies with Brian. Have you anything to tell us this week that you've done? Anything of interest?
Jersey.
What jersey did you buy?
Leeds.
Is this it on you?
Yes. What do you think?
Blue and Red Bull. That's what I think.
It's purple and pink on it as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And is that your team? That's your football team?
No, I just thought the colours were nice.
And I hate United as well. So anything that hates United, I support.
You should do that. You know that teenage trend that's just about wearing whatever GAA jersey you want? It doesn't matter that you're not from Wexford. You wear a purple and gold jersey if you want to.
I mean, I have like Ghana jerseys.
What are they?
A country of Ghana.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant as in GAA Ghana jerseys.
Oh, no. Of all the countries I said. No, I just have a load of jerseys for every team. I have a load of Man City jerseys. I don't have any Man United jerseys. I wouldn't go that far. But
okay.
I'll get a jersey for anything if I think it looks nice and if it's cheap.
Let's move on. There's not a documentary in that.
Okay, sorry.
Okay. You asked me.
You just needed to stop. Just remember to stop.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Mark Wahlberg and Halle Berry star in The Union. It's out now on Netflix, so you don't have to go far for it. And actually, now I know the trailer probably has all the best bits, but I kind of smiled the whole way through the trailer. I really liked the idea of this.
Yeah, it's an interesting execution because
J.K. Simmons is in it as well, and you'll recognise his face from Whiplash. Do you remember that movie from about 10 years ago now?
2014,
Wow, yeah, I loved Whiplash, I have to say.
He's a guy now that's just in so many things.
Yeah, a really kind of doing everything, not doing the fame thing.
And normally he's in things that are really good.
Mm-hmm. So is this really good? Let's have a listen and then Brian will tell us what he thinks.
Welcome to London, Mikey.
Rox, what the hell? Where did Jersey go?
Hell of a wake-up call, huh, Mike?
I'm Roxanne's boss. You drive.
Somebody needs to tell me what the hell is going on.
Bullshit!
First time in London, Mike?
This first time out of the tri-state area.
Two nights ago, a list containing the identities of every U.S. spy was stolen. And to get it back, we need someone who is not on that list.
We need a nobody. A nobody I can trust.
So what, you guys like the FBI or something?
We work for the Union.
We're looking for street smarts over book smarts.
Ow.
Reflex bad.
We get shit done.
What he said.
Go!
Reflex still bad.
Stop! Huh?
Okay, here we go.
All right, he's dead.
There you go. That's a clip from The Union. Looks good. Sounds good, I think. I love a bit of Halle Berry. I haven't seen her in anything in a long time, I have to say.
She was in John Wick there a few years ago. Oh, that was kind of her.
That wouldn't be my type of a movie, you see.
Yeah, well, to be fair, is anything your type of movie? No, so this is an interesting one because I saw the combination of Halle Berry and Mark Wahlberg and I'm like, that's an interesting combo.
It is an interesting combo.
Because it's like, I would never have placed them together, but
have
at the same time...
Have they ever done anything before together?
Not that I know of.
They're of the same generation.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like they fit in well together.
Because it
starts off as a school reunion. So Halle Berry is this secret agent person, and she needs someone that's incognito, that's hasn't achieved anything in their life and has no footprint in the world, which is,
she is
quite sad. No, Mark Wahlberg is the dude that she goes to because she was in school with him. She used to go out with him in school.
And why is he no footprint?
He never really joined up any social media.
Okay.
He just kind of stayed at home in his hometown, and he thought he hadn't really achieved anything in life. It kind of had like a Hallmark movie type. She goes home and finds the guy that she went to school with that she like always liked, whatever. And it's like, it's weird because it's combining that with an espionage movie.
Okay. Is there a love story / espionage movie in this?
There's a flirtation story. There's not a case of, oh my God, they're madly in love throughout the whole thing. A lot of it is them being like, this isn't, I'm not making a move right now. And she's like, that's why I'm not making a move either. Like, and then you're like, oh, there's a bit of tension there. Do you know? So it's kind of more fun like that, but it's such an interesting concept because it's like, I don't know, it's because he's been in other movies as like an agent. So you're used to seeing him in like The Departed. So he at one stage, one of his personas is a fella from Boston. So he puts on the Boston accent. And it's kind of a throwback to him.
Okay, so it's a nod to his old movies.
It's a very chill, like, generally sometimes I'm like, if you miss 20 minutes, that's it. Like, you're done.
Okay.
Whereas this one, if you left for half an hour and came back, you'd be like, yeah, I can guess where we are. Do you know? So it's like,
is that a good thing?
I think so. I think it's very much a, you throw it on Netflix. If you doze off for 10 minutes, it's okay kind of a thing. Do you know? You can relax and watch it. Like, you know?
Okay. All right.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah. Netflix.
You see, it's a weird thing at the minute because we're like, even at home now, it's a case of like, what streaming services are we actually using now? Because there's so many.
Yeah, but at the same time, we have no Netflix anymore.
Yeah.
And apart from Emily in Paris, I haven't had a moment where I've thought, oh, I wish I had that.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie, it's starting to become the same way at our house as well. Like, it's like, this was on it and okay, but like, it's not, I wouldn't say get Netflix to watch this either. Like, you know?
Have they kind of died down on the let's star Robert De Niro in this 6-hour movie and try and win an Oscar?
Yeah, well, it's a weird thing because I feel like the different streaming platforms have gone in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Prime has gone for entertainment,
mm-hmm.
and Netflix is now trying to go for all the Oscars. So it's trying to go for the more drama. So if you like dramas, I think Netflix is more your thing, like, you know? Mm. And then Paramount is kind of the more action stuff and the more kind of like high octane thriller stuff. And then Disney is just kind of the more family stuff. Mm. So it's like, everything isn't general anymore. They're gone into more niches.
Yeah,
so
they're doing the genres.
Yeah.
Okay, so The Union, will we black pudding it? Or have you anything more to say about it?
It's the kind of movie that feels like it was put into ChatGPT, come up with a movie.
Okay, and I'm sure people are doing that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But it's like a combination of combined genres and come up with a movie to put on Netflix. And it's like, a girl goes back to her high school love to take part in an espionage movie. Do you mean it's just like to rekindle their love find meaning?
Put love story and thriller together and write a script, please.
Yeah, so like, okay, like it's not, I'm not dissing the writers or anything, but it just has that kind of a very simple movie.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it either. Like, you know, like,
do you know what? There is nothing wrong with you knowing what's coming next.
Yeah.
If you just want to be entertained for 109 minutes, I think.
Because this is the thing. Like, you can just enjoy it. There's nothing, like, there is a couple of twists in it, but it's not like, oh my God, like, mm-hmm. this has made me rethink the entire movie. It's like, you know, so it's like,
black pudding it there for me.
I give it like a strong 6, do you know?
Yeah, that seems to be the way of the IMDb's and the Rotten Tomatoes of the world as well. 5 and 6, you know?
Yeah, like, but no, but it's a solid 6 of like, if you're stuck, yeah.
If I'm stuck, I just reach for reality television. I just, even the 109 minutes, that is 10 minutes off 2 hours, 11 minutes if you're going to be pedantic. Hey, anyway, 6?
Six
black puddings out of 10 for The Union. What's your movie so far of the year? We're more than halfway in.
I think Kneecap.
Kneecap? Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because Fall Guy was fantastic as well.
Loved it.
I really loved that.
Two movies I saw, Brian.
You nailed it so far.
Yeah.
But there's nothing else. Like, those were my two tens, I think, so far this year.
Old time for the movies. And I think streaming media making movies as well has a lot to say about it because it's all been churned out, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the next step is going to be feature films are going to start being released on YouTube.
Okay.
And then we're going to be talking about this film on YouTube.
Well, I'm going to be a lot of tapping on that YouTube on my phone, so because I can never last more than 90 seconds. So that's going to be a problem for me. 6 black puddings out of 10 for The Union. Brian went to see it, as usual. We are heading into...
At home.
Brian went home to see it, to his mummy. Did anyone else watch it with you?
No, I always watch... Whenever I watch a movie at home, I watch it on my own.
Okay. We're heading into autumn time now, so we should have some good... We should have something good, shouldn't we? Or have we left it all behind?
Now,
did we peak with Kneecap?
Well, we're starting to get into the start of the film festival
season.
Oh,
yes.
And I'm not...
Love it.
As you can tell, I'm not in Venice.
I know.
So I
for the second year running, you're not in Venice.
I'm not in Venice. Toronto Film Festival's coming up soon as well. Wednesday...
Okay.
It's having its premiere this
Any
weekend
inklings?
As well. I think Wednesday is going to be solid. I think there's is it Eden, the new one with Sydney Sweeney and Ana de Armas?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Starting at Toronto. My friend was trying to get tickets to that, but he couldn't.
And there's one coming out with Demi Moore as well. Is it called The Substance? It looks really good too.
No, there's some things coming out and like it could be good. Could be awful. Is it going to be an Oscar push? Is it just going to be a thing go straight to string? You don't
know.
But
I
feel like there'll be one at least will come out of Venice. That would be like fun. I don't know. It's a weird time lately because before we used to be a case of like tripping over ourselves with so many good stuff. But now it just seems to be more scarce and there seems to be more like re-releases in cinemas rather than releases and stuff that is released. Seems to be kind of more like everything's gone more niche or it's gone very general. Mm-hmm. So it's
so true.
It's a weird time.
It is a weird time. Thank you very much.
Problem.
Talk to you next week.
Maybe.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.